Hello and welcome back to JLXP. End of summer, week three, right before LCS's 2 week hiatus. So we're not coming back for like 13 more days in terms of stage games, but we just had a
Isn't that long?
Yeah, dude. It's July. So it's the third. We record this on Sunday to release Monday. It's the third now. LCS comes back on the 16th. By then, Kyrie Irving might have a new team.
Would they? I think because, I mean, I doubt he is going to be able to move. But that is
funny. we got actually a lot because there was an interesting discussion. I mean, maybe not interesting, but there was almost a lot of negativity after Saturday where some people were saying. I mean, Dom like turned off his co-stream and there was like a small Reddit thread about, oh yeah, the games are so boring, blah, blah, blah. But as we were going through what we wanted to talk about this episode, we almost had an interesting storyline for basically every team.
Yeah.
Which is just wild. EG, C9, FlyQuest was 2-0, two strong games, 100 Thieves, also 2-0. Immortals, Disaster Artists, TSM actually only have two wins and then reevaluating CLG. That's already seven teams that doesn't even talk about TL, which I think we're going to skip this episode. We're actually going to skip TL because there's too much other content.
Yeah, way too much. And I know we talk about TL a lot, so it makes sense for us to just hit on the teams that have a lot of... TL had a little bit of struggle, but not enough for us to comment on it, I think.
There's no way we don't talk about TL like almost every week. So they can take a slight break. Week. Golden Guardians Twitter account will complain that we didn't talk about them, but that's fine. They can do their thing. Okay. Yeah, they can do their thing. Yeah, I've been bullied enough by whoever runs that account. Okay, anyway.
They're taking tabs on you.
let's actually start with EG. Let's start at the top.
Yeah.
Inspired, two player of the weeks in 3 weeks. He was week one and week three. Week one was very close. I think there were a lot of people pulling for Bjergsen because he went like 14-0. But I think Inspired just played so well. He glazed our eyes over what TL did. But then this week was really solid. The Kane game in particular.
Yeah.
For me, I liked how in the post-game interview, he said, oh yeah, Vulcan just said, hey, Kane is good here. He's like, ooh, okay. But surprising number of 5-pick jungles this week. And this one worked out really well. What did you think of Inspired and EG overall?
He's been insane. And this is kind of what the Inspired that I expected in Spring Split. A lot of the conversation was like, man, this guy is the LEC MVP. And he's a carry jungler. Like the running the highlights of his performance in the LEC, like the Pentakill on the Viego is an example of that. Like I was on board, and I know that during the Spring Split itself, there was a lot of issues, obviously, like new players on his team, like Jojo Pyeon coming from Academy, and also just like having a new roster in and of itself is always going to be difficult. And he just needed to work on the 2v2 with him and Jojo. But he goes to MSI. He smurfs it, individually the best player on the team, and then goes into this split and has just been killing it. And a lot of it goes to the team as a whole, feeling as if, like, regardless of the huge changes in between the split and the tiredness of, like, performing at all times, I thought that they would diminish in skill, and they said that they have, but not enough for them to be losing out. So for Inspired, it's phenomenal. And he shoots up in terms of, he's the best player in the split. It feels like for me. Mm-hmm. And for a while I had him, I think he was like for me fourth or third, listed on my jungle tier list just in general for a while.
Who'd you have? What was your jungle tier list?
Number one was Blabber.
Yep.
I think I had Santorin based off of the split too.
Yep.
It was Closer that was there. Yep, Closer was a big, So like my top three had to be of those. And I think it was in that order. So it's been crazy. I'll even pull it up as we go along.
No, that makes perfect sense because so many times jungle tier lists, especially in Spring Split, it is incredibly difficult to divorce how a jungler is doing versus how the team is succeeding. And EG was not good in Spring. In the Spring playoffs at MSI and so far in Summer, they have been the best. They're now performing in the last couple months of LCS the way they said they were performing in scrims in most of spring, which makes me think this actually is somewhat sustainable. But Inspired would be through 3 weeks. Not that you make an MVP vote after 3 weeks, but he's in the lead. He's definitely in the lead.
He is 100%. Like, looking at my list now, exactly like I said. And then I had River behind him, but I know a lot of people put River, they have a high regard for River and would put him as a top three jungler. So absolutely, Inspired has just shot himself up to the top. And I don't think, you ask anybody, a fan, an analyst, they would say his name too. So it's been really fun for him. And Emily's been talking about just like how he has improved even in comparison to his MVP split in the LEC. Just based off how he works with his laners. And I mean, that's just fun to see. So I'm excited just because that means that the expectation of TL being the best and, you know, 100 Thieves, you know, coming back for revenge, all these things that we're kind of setting up and waiting for going into playoffs, which we were really far away from. EG is showing they can be defending champions easily.
Yeah, we're still 7 weeks from the start of playoffs because of bye week and then 6 more weeks of regular season and then 4 weeks of playoffs. But definitely a lot of intrigue. I do want to shout out Danny, though, because I have some stats in front of me here. Coming into the week, he had over 1,000 DPM.
Yeah.
And yes, that is heavily influenced by the fact that he played in 5 games, 3 Ezreal games, and then 1 Liandry's Misfortune, where he's just like poking with E. But stats told me through the first 2 weeks of a season, that was 200 more DPM than anyone else in LCS history.
Yeah.
So like 20% more than anyone ever is a very impressive stat for, And he played Seraphine today. So his average is now down to 859, but he is also still leading the league in kills with 37, as he has led the league in kills for the last year, summer split and spring. And when I checked, he was cumulatively almost 100 kills ahead of the second place person in that time span. So yes, the team gives him a lot of resources. Yes, Inspired has been great, but Danny has just actually been super, super solid. It's just he doesn't do it in the ways that are as noticeable because his laning phase just hasn't been top of the league.
Yeah, and on top of that, I remember because my first detraction to that was like, he's playing Ezreal, right, to your point.
Yeah.
But then we, once again, ran through stats just about like the average Ezreal DPM in the LCS.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he far exceeds that. So it's like not even the whole thing of an Ezreal. No, he's just playing well. he's just playing much better.
Try as you might.
You're trying to poke holes and it's like, wait a minute, this balloon is literally made of iron. So he's playing really damn well. And even hearing from him in the interviews, like talking about how he feels better because he's not spamming the game. And that's a lot of the times mentally talking about, like, mentally speaking, if you're coming from MSI, like he put out in his tweet, and also you're just back into the grind in the game, like, it's easy to get burnt out.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Yeah.
And it's easy to get, when it comes about burning out, it's like easy to get really demotivated about the game. And it feels like they are right now doing a great job at taking the right steps. And they're the best right now in the league.
Yeah.
So it goes a long way.
The funny thing there is I kind of want to put someone like bookmark this moment because we just talked up EG like crazy.
I think
they are going to play less than basically everyone else in the next 13 days. Because they jumped out to first place. They have a 1-game cushion, but they need the break, right? Like they see that level of burnout coming because they didn't actually take a significant break after MSI. I think that's kind of how they juked the MSI hangover, so to speak, is they, like Vulcan talked about, not really taking many days off solo queue. They kind of just kept going.
Yeah.
So they would crash and you don't want to crash at playoffs. So if there is a time to dip, I actually think it would be now where they should take a full week off. A week is actually not that much in terms of being able to reset. So I'd say like take full 7 days, then at least the Monday of the next, which would be 8, maybe Tuesday. But knowing them, like, pro players don't like to take that long off anyway. So they'll probably, if it will be hard to get them to take 8 days off, but I think that's what they should do.
They'll very likely, you know, play solo queue and all that. Like, even hearing Jojo Pyeon's interview with Travis, very much that's the case. So
let's just grind. Let's just grind.
We're grinding. Okay. That's it.
Edie's really good. C9.
There it is.
Was undefeated.
Yep.
Kind of. There is a weird, it's like a difficult conversation to have with Cloud9. I actually need to pull up who they lost to in week one, because you and I talked about them a lot after week one. They're like, they're 0-3. Yes. What's it going to mean? And then,
so I have the list here.
Yeah. Okay. Go.
They lost to EG. They lost to Golden Guardians, and then they lost to Team Liquid. The Golden Guardians one is rough, of course.
Okay.
I remember that one. That was actually Golden Guardians having like a scaling draft, playing team fights poorly with Kayla and everything, but it just did not matter. it just did not matter.
This is something I talked to Azale about in the green room, and it would have been more pertinent had C9 been able to beat FlyQuest today, which was actually a pretty dominating defeat at the hands of FlyQuest. But it was easy to say, oh yeah, those three losses don't matter. They don't count because they didn't have their full roster. So Azale's point was, if they actually went 6-3, it would be easy for people to say, oh, they're the best team in the league. Yeah. But even with the full roster, like, that doesn't mean they would have beaten TL and EG. Those are, in many people's mind, the two best teams in the league. So even if they had their full roster, they might have still lost those games. So it's like, where would you be? This is like almost a thought experiment, seeing the first 2 weeks of their full roster. Let's say Zven, Berserker were solved a week earlier and they got to play in week one. What would their week one record have been with Zven and Berserker?
I think they take two wins. I know we made a joke about like Golden Guardians account not being happy. I don't actually remember if that was even on stream. But anyways, yes, I think they take that win. Because even if I mention draft, like draft, as we already see, changes drastically with an extra week of practice and feeling out the meta, plus with your right bottom lane, because then you add their voice into the draft conversation of what they actually want to play and what they see as valuable. And we know that Berserker has his picks and Zven will have his words. He'll say exactly what he wants to play. So I think that win for sure. And then I would actually say that they would take the win versus Team Liquid. I think it's a really close one, 100%. Team Liquid hasn't really been – week one has actually been really good with Team Liquid, actually. So that one is really – that's a hard debate. Yeah. But I think Cloud9 is right now a really strong team. Coming into the split, I said that they would take much longer to get better, and I was wrong. They were actually just – the moment they got their players – boom. Beat Team 100 Thieves like that, and Zen instantly was already a strong support player. So I know they need more time and they're not where they want to be, but I felt like they would have been, with an extra week of practice and everything involved, would have been ready.
Because there is an element as well that even the loss today for FlyQuest, you can like manufacture an argument that if they had been practicing for 4 weeks instead of two, then they pick a better bottom lane and they don't get demolished by Aphra Mu Johnson.
Now that one is tough, because you can make that case, but also I also just think that there are going to be games where you just shit the bed. And I feel like the same thing happened to Jensen didn't have an excuse in that specific game, and I thought that lane was hard really for him. He was not playing well. So that game, I think, was just a straight up them playing like ass and Fudge F keying and seeing his
what is happening. I was like,
guys, please. So that one is probably the best example for anybody that's against the cause of C9 or the excuse or points that I'm making to say, here's how they're playing versus FlyQuest. But every team will have those games, even in a best of, like, especially in a best of one. And that's just more of a credit to FlyQuest, who played just period. Like, their bot lane just stomped. It was one of those typical, okay, we hit level two first, they disrespected us. Aphra exhausted, Zeri got her to cleanse, just tagged her. It was just one of those things where they just played it perfectly, and C9, for whatever reason, just disrespected them. So,
yeah.
Going back to the main point, Cloud9, I think, is really good. I still think they lose this game regardless.
Yeah.
Week one, I think, would have been different.
Yeah, I kind of think to go back as well, if they had arrived 1 week earlier, I think they go 1-2. If they had arrived 3 weeks earlier and mm-hmm. had a full preseason, then they go 2-1, probably. Yeah. And then their overall record would either be 5-2 or 4-3, but they currently sit at 3-4. So I think it kind of cost them about two games.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, and one other point I want to make about C9 was I want to track this kind of going into playoffs. I know this is going to be a long thread, but the amount of like synergy-ish mid-jungle stuff Blabber and Jensen are trying to play almost feels like too much to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did like Yone Lilia, Yone Gragas, Yasuo Gragas. They are somewhat, especially Yasuo Gragas is like a classic mid jungle thing, but like it's not actually that good. Like those picks aren't meta anymore. That hasn't been a thing for like a couple years. And yes, it didn't look good today because Jensen was trying to push his advantage on Yasuo really hard against Takui. And as Takui mentioned in his protopro afterwards, it's just not a good matchup for Jensen. So he like should lose that one. But like those are just not things that I'm really expecting them to pull out in the best of five in playoffs.
Oh, right.
Like, it's almost just like, oh, they're doing it just to like maybe have fun, or like maybe because they feel like they have this pre-existing synergy, it like helps them build it up faster. But I don't actually think that's even worth playing right now, would be maybe the like controversial take, because one, it's not meta, and two, I really don't think they're going to play it when they need to win.
I would agree with you on that one, but I disagree on the idea of not playing it now. I'm always a big believer in first 3 weeks, just if the meta is good for a certain pick, just play it. If you feel like you're bad on it, still play it. When you're going up against better teams,
I agree with that, but do you think Yasuo Gragas is like, oh yeah, this is what you have to practice so it's ready? Like that just seems like a thing that isn't even good that they want to do.
I think Gragas is good. Okay. I think Gragas is good. We're seeing a lot more teams play it top and jungle. And it makes sense. You can get through, if you can, as long as you can get through the early, the first pathing and you're not invaded on and just destroyed, then it's okay. In fact, that is what happened. I just remembered Jose literally like they warded his red, recognized he started topside, contested his Raptors, smited it. So like,
Gragas
is still getting invaded and that's always going to, so that was still a problem, but I think we're seeing more Gragas and it's working from what I'm seeing. And so like I think the combo is okay, but you can't pick it early knowing that it's so easy to disengage right now with how strong Seraphine and like a lot of disengage picks are.
Yeah.
So that being said, I think it's good. I think right now too many teams have too many different takes on how the meta is played. So you're seeing so many wildly different drafts, but that one is, I think, a good experiment of like, we think this is good, we should play it. And if it doesn't work out for us, like, then okay, fine. Like, we're earlier than usual, just going to be playing to what we think is best for us.
Sure.
But if it's working for us, then great. Like, we have another option going into playoffs. So it's around week six to week seven, mostly week six maybe, where I'm like, okay, let's just play what we actually think we're good at. let's just tighten it up.
Yeah. Agree with the tightening point around the end of the regular season, and now would be the time to start getting kooky. The thing that I don't like is like the team that plays really, really, really safe standard, get a bunch of wins, then they get to week seven, they're like, it's time to make sure we're flexible, and then they just, that's the worst to me, because then they run out of practice on the things that they're actually going to need to get wins on in playoffs. FlyQuest, we were just touching on them now, man. 2-0.
That's crazy.
I wrote in 10 thoughts because I'd actually been over some of their games before. I checked their like average gold at 20 in their first five games, and the average was basically zero. Like they were as neutral as a team as possible. But obviously the surprise win this week was the C9 victory. Both mid lane and bottom lane just really smashed. But You be quiet, Siri.
You found it on the web.
You be quiet, Siri. I'm taking my watch off.
Yeah. I found it too. I'm just looking at the standings. Yeah. Yes.
Do not disturb.
There it is. Yeah, FlyQuest is a big surprise. I actually, not a lot. People will be surprised and like put a fuss about where I ranked TSM, where I ranked CLG. A little bit of a fuss about IMT because I had a little bit more faith on them. But FlyQuest, I think I had them 8th. And right now there's position 4th. Obviously, everyone's in a cluster, but they're just performing really well.
It's really weird how my opinion of FlyQuest has changed. And you agreed with me quickly on the desk because you and I had the bet in Spring Split when FlyQuest started 5-1. And we're like, it's time to start taking the environment seriously. And I was saying, like, they're not good. But I actually feel better about them as a 4-3 team than I did about them as a 5-1 team.
I agree.
Based on the way they are winning, just seems more solid to me. Like the win today was just like, oh yeah, they outplayed the bottom lane 2v2, they outplayed mid lane, and then they didn't make significant mistakes. Got a quick Dragon Soul and won the game. And they had a game earlier this year where they just got like a 22-minute Dragon Soul as well. They are winning in a more repeatable fashion than they were in the Spring Split. So I don't think they're going to be like world beaters, but we messed up, man. We messed up on our fifth place team bet. If we redid that, I might actually put FlyQuest as the fifth best team.
That would be a great call. I still have a little bit of faith in CLG that I have up. I think I have the safest quote unquote bet because they were first place at the time in which we made it.
Yeah.
And they had already gotten a lot of wins. The concern is being able to keep it. But the point about FlyQuest, very legitimate. Like, these are just straight up legit wins. I mean, because people will always put asterisks on when you have a specific comp and you're playing towards it. The Seraphine thing for CLG. Yeah. Last split for FlyQuest was the Janna, Karma, top lane support, top lanes that Kumo had just really nailed.
And now it's like arguably Twitch, but they only got like one win with Twitch, actually. It just looked good in the other game. They actually lost that game to TL, where they were winning the majority of the time.
Exactly. They should have won that game and added that to their win column. And honestly, the Twitch is just them understanding a very well-played counterpick in Champs Q of just outranging and outscaling. Zarya, of course, everyone will see her as the demon outscaler, but she has a range disadvantage versus Twitch, and he can get past laning phase. So I just thought that, A, it must have been – it is a few factors. The first one is for sure the Korean trip. For this team. And it felt like them being able to just work on themselves individually was a big factor. Watching their streams, because they were all streaming at different times, it felt like they had a great culture within the team. Like, they were all in a room just joking around anytime, just messing around with each other. And I felt like maybe that's something that, last split they had good team culture and always felt like when you were listening to them, we're just joking around and we're very clear in what their goals were. And then when you bring in Philip, which I legit thought was a downgrade. I still think that one is, and a lot of people still think, you know, okay, maybe not anymore because Philip is actually performing, but it's like at side grade. And that was the thing where I'm like, this is the only team coming into this split that actually went, that didn't improve. But then in terms of what's on paper. And then they come in, literally are just playing better as a team. Philip is not only just set up to succeed, but he is confident. Yeah. And a lot of his Aatrox game that he had was just straight up confident. He was diving in and it felt like he's being enabled in the team to just go for it in team fights. Mm-hmm. He's made maybe like two big mistakes around objectives that I saw when he TP'd too early it's back top lane when I and they lost Drake. Forget which game this was. This was really recently where I was like, okay, he should have just went top lane, grab the wave, and then TP to the objective because they had air control. But that was one thing. Then there was one time where I felt like he didn't actually go to the team. This is when they had a lead versus TL, I'm pretty sure. And they lost that Drake. So once again, he's really new. And his team fighting is really strong, much better than how I felt he was in Academy. So this is just a win for the team. Like, they made a good decision. Their offseason was spent wisely and they're playing well as a team.
Yeah. That will be one that I would, maybe we don't do this enough. Like, at the end of a split, trying to judge if like the roster change a team made was correct.
Yeah.
Right. Because
I like
it. Yeah. I think like the really controversial one last year for Dignitas was like Yasui Saligo, like that thing.
Yeah.
And like that was one, and this is going back a little bit. I actually didn't mind it because they were very average, probably overperformed with Saligo. And the thing, the metric that I like to use a lot of times is like when the LCS player goes to academy, how does he do? And then I can be like, oh yeah, wow, like he's demolishing academy. But like that just didn't happen with Saligo, and it does. And like another player
well initially in academy, but you're right that he didn't just straight up demolish the class.
Anyway, I want to check back on Philip because that is a that is one that can very easily get like just heavy controversy because like, hey dude, you went 9-9 with Kumo. Why are you bringing in this other guy who like wasn't even in many people's opinion the best player in academy? But I agree with you, so far it's working out really well. 100 Thieves. 100 Thieves.
100.
I can never figure this team out, man. I wrote and this is something that I believe in for 100 Thieves, that they need some external form of motivation a lot of the time to succeed. And this is what I kind of attribute their slow start in spring to, and even their 3-2 start here in summer. And if you saw the Huhi interview, he mentioned like, cause I think it was Travis like brought up our little like three team power rankings we'd done in the waiting room like a week and a half ago, where of the three of us, only one of us put 100 Thieves in the top three.
Yeah.
And then Travis asked Huhi about that. He's like, what do you think? And Huhi said like, oh, that's good. That's good because it will motivate us to do better. And I don't know. I think motivation is a big thing for this team. And I think they were able to find it in this last week and just like perform better, if that makes sense. Abadaga's laning phase was better. Someday started popping off again. But like they're very real slumps. It's not like this team is very good and we're just like not paying attention to the right things when they're losing. Like when they lose, they're bad. And when they win, they're actually playing better. They just are a really up and down team to me.
Yeah, and I think this team, just from watching them, in the differences between their wins and losses, and it's not all of them, but like just a correlation for me is just that they tend to skip steps at times. That puts them in bad positions. Or when they are in a good position in a team fight, will push it way too much. Discipline is a big thing in that I feel like in team fights can put them in bad situations. And so that's the one thing that I really, really want to see for them to like improve. That's what makes teams like Team Liquid and all that consistent, is that when they have a lead, or even when they're in a winning spot in a team fight, they don't need to keep going. They won't. They'll base. They'll reset back onto the map because they already have an advantage, advantageous position on the map. And so they play it slow. 100 Thieves, a lot of the times, will, if they are in a losing, in a slump, a lot of the times will either like bot lane will take a 2v2 fight that's not good for them, or jungle will go for a gank and maybe they're not on the same page, him and Abadaga, or him and Someday. And so that's something that I really want them to do better. It was a while back, it was a split before, when it felt like they were in a slump, and it was like, wow, a lot of these team fights I'm watching, they're winning initially, like around Rift Herald, like they're having a good spot, they over push, and then the enemy team like just takes it, like just basically is able to slap back. So I agree. And I also, Abadaga, I want to give him his roses. Like you said, this week was really good for him. In general, like in week one, his team fighting was on point, but of course, like he's blind picking a lot, the lane's not going, is going even worse than maybe it should. He even said on broadcast like that's something that he's recognized and he's going to fix, and he fixed it. I just want to see more consistency around that as a team.
Yeah, I think discipline is the best word you hit on for 100 Thieves, because one of the words would be motivation, but I think the way that the motivation manifests for this team is through the discipline that with which they play. Like, it's, you would think that, you know, pro League of Legends players, when it's stage time, they're able to like lock into this zone of focus. But I would imagine, and this is speculating, I would imagine in most weeks of scrims, they are never locking in to that level of focus that they need to be able to access on stage. So even when they try and do it on stage, it's like, ah, we've just built so many bad habits from like 6:30 lazy scrims. But then when they get their asses kicked, they lock in for like 3 days of solid scrims. And then we see the discipline games on stage. I don't think you can just, from my experience with players, you can't check discipline that quickly, but like a lot of times when you're able to lock in, lose to improve is what you say, actually.
100%, actually. Like, I feel like when they are in those slumps and verbally, like on interviews and all that stuff, and you can see it in their faces, they'll kick themselves about it and be the most vocal about their own failures. And like, a lot of the times they get these interviews because they're still winning those games regardless of how sloppy they are. And then they'll just look 10 times better the closer they are to the playoffs or the playoffs themselves. And it's because of that. It's when you are literally losing games in the same way and it's getting frustrating and you're like, no, actually, we're going to this practice and we are going to play well and we're going to hold each other accountable and like have that levels of stress. Like, and when we're in those team environments, like, you're right, it gets really difficult to focus on every game, especially on the game fives in scrims, which are just straight up gulags. That's one example every team goes through. But that's something that just from the outside looking in, it seems like an issue. But still, like, it's the regular season. It seems like they're trying a lot of things today on Someday's birthday. Happy birthday, Someday.
Happy birthday, Someday.
I mean, he came out player of the game on his Akali, so it's nice to be able to see them still improving and finding new angles. Because my thing was like, okay, is Someday now a carry top laner? Like, is he able to play carries, or was it Tryndamere? was it just the Tryndamere? And then he just smurfed on the Akali. So it's good to see.
Okay, Raz, that does it for the happy stuff.
Okay.
We're only going to talk about losers now.
I'm ready for depression hour.
Let's talk about all the teams that lost. Immortals, TSM, and unfortunately, our former first place team, Counter Logic Gaming.
Oof.
We had to talk about it, though. Like, these are the teams that need to be able to improve. Let's start at the least bad and do CLG. Because they still are sitting at 4 wins, as you mentioned. They were your pick for 5th place in the LCS. My pick was TSM. Neither of them are looking that good right now.
That's true.
What do you think? What's your updated take? CoreJJ on the desk with Hansama. CoreJJ has the best trash talk. He said,
"Yes."
We asked him, what do you think about CLG? And he said, I don't have this exact quote, but I'm going to try and recreate it. He said that they were playing Seraphine before other teams knew really what it did, which gave them wins. But without that, they're Spring Split CLG. So that's what we expected.
That's the hottest take.
That's actually really mean.
Yes, it is.
He said it so nicely.
The man is able to just lure you into believing him and agreeing with him just because it's CoreJJ and he is the nicest man on the planet, or at least he comes off as that. Yeah. But that's it. That's insane. That's crazy. No, they're different. I mean, like, yes, by the roster, they're the same outside of Dokla.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't agree with it. Like, I was able to say, much like everybody else, yes, them going up against Cloud9, they're going to lose to Cloud9. Against Team Liquid, they're going to lose against Team Liquid. I don't think they're going to be diehards CLG fans or just, like, fans of the league in general. They're like, they are a first place team now. And that is not the case. Mm-hmm. And yes, the drafts help them.
Yep.
But they are just simply playing better as a team. That doesn't mean they're first, second, or third. That just means they have drastically improved from being a bottom of the half team to being a top of the half team. I'm trying to remember what exactly they were placed in spring. Just making sure now.
It was eighth.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, Immortals so TSM were they were 6-12.
They're not an eighth place team. I firmly still believe they're fifth. Okay. And when I, you know, like the take was top five. For me, it was like, yeah, that's fifth. Because EG, 100 Thieves, Team Liquid, and C9 is how I play.
There's a pretty solid four that we expect.
Exactly. Yeah. And it would be drama if any of those teams were not there. That's an outright, because of how much money they paid for those teams, a failure for them to not be top four. So CLG, I think they're fifth. I do. I think, you know, the conversation will, we kind of already talked about FlyQuest. That's making me sweat. Like that right now is making me sweat, because FlyQuest as a team looked good and they took down Cloud9 and everything. But I don't agree with CoreJJ. I think that they are a good team. I think they are a top five team. I don't think they're better than that.
I think they played better than they have in spring.
Yeah.
And I am just seeing the team lose, even though we expected it to happen, does give you a little bit of pause. Like the mistake the Contracts made on his like third invade that gave TL the first access to Drake was just really disappointing, because it really looked like they had the ability to control, and TL hasn't actually been playing at a very high level. They do look a little bit hesitant.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought based on Contracts' ability to steal the first two Gromps, that would have been like a winnable game, but they just, he did the thing that he did a lot in spring where he just went for way too big of a bite.
Yeah.
And he went for way too big of a bite against Cloud9 as well. If you remember, they tried that three man dive on Yumi Zeri. It backfired. That's when they lost control of the game. So, there's a larger meta point. Hard.
Yeah. That game also was hard in the draft. I think the Tryndamere pick on five was really good.
By Fudge.
I also think, Fudge. I also think that the combination of, Zeri, Yumi, and Udyr, just Yumi and Udyr in and of itself, just makes it really difficult for what DLG is trying to do. So I thought the draft was really good from them. So, yes, the bot side of the map was something that they just kind of threw it based off the dive, but I always thought that they were never going to push their lead large enough on the bot side to make it meaningful, and their team fight was just going to be too good. You know, team fight plus the Tryndamere. So, that one, I think the draft is going to be difficult. And I also just think that CLG in general, outside of that game,
is playing
well. Like they, you know, as you mentioned, taking too much of a bite from Contracts, and I don't want to see that, because that's what started in the in spring split. And those invades were really biting because he was taking shortcuts without really pushing lanes. And he was hoping that they wouldn't see him, but he was going over wards. And you're like, okay, please stop. Don't do this. We're playing good team League of Legends, and we're not reliant on our bot lane anymore with Dokla being added. Fudge gave him, of course, credit as having greatly improved in lane. And so, like, if you just have strong lanes now, then, yeah, I agree. They're just a better team now. This week was really unfortunate, but, like, kind of I expected them to go 0-2 this week.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. TSM.
Uh-oh.
Gosh darn it, TSM.
Red alarm. We need the red alert.
What are you doing, man?
Oh, like, man.
Man, I had this, like, this weird sense of hope when I saw Maple defeating Bjergsen.
Yeah.
I felt like, hey, man, he has this magic at international events where he would always seem to be, like, especially at MSIs, would be when he usually faced Bjergsen. And then once at Worlds, when they went 0-5 and then stopped TSM from advancing to the group stage, that was 2017. But I don't know. I was like, okay, maybe I really underestimated Maple. He had that one bad split, spring 2020 in the LPL, but he was good 2021 on PSG. Yes. Like, him and Speaker really get along. This Mia guy, maybe he's just this journeyman who's never been given his chance. Hooney's always been good. Tactical, just got to find his consistency. Anyway, that's a lot of ifs. I realize now that is far too many ifs, and they're just messing up. The game today to me was just super, super tragic. Like they're losing in these like weirdly tragic ways. So they lost to I'll go over their two games really quickly.
Let's do it.
They lost to EG. This game was actually quite close for quite a long time. Yeah. It was like about 1,500 gold and almost no kills about 20 minutes into the game. But they are taking these fights in both games where it ends up being like 4-0 or 5-1 in what look to be even games, because the beginnings of the fights are so bad. And then it's literally like, just there's nobody to say that the fight is lost, and they all just continue to commit.
Yeah.
Which is pretty tragic.
It is. It's actually so depressing that it's a back-to-back, because once again, we have no skin in the game. So, but everybody that watches those team fights are like, we've been there. in solo queue games where it's like, okay, this should be an easy kill in and out. And you see what, in this case, Spica sees when he goes in for these kills, and the team is rallying around him because they look like good angles. But then in the EG game, Danny comes out with a sliver of HP. EG collapses really well. They just wipe them. You're like, okay, we tried for it. It looked like it was good. It was the whole old joke of my mind is telling me no, and on Lee Sin. And then it was this game. It was the exact same idea. And it sucks because you have to trust the call.
You do. Yeah. If you stop trusting the call, it actually gets worse.
Yeah, it's actually insanely annoying if there's somebody, when a call is made, that's detracting from it. If you're far out in advance and like you're talking about it as something like a overall strategic call, you can have somebody that adds information and gives you an alternative. But if it's a split second call of, I think this is a good fight, you cannot say no to it. And the fact that it's obviously working out in such catastrophic ways and they're losing to it, it actually just really chips at the trust. I really don't want that to happen for this team, because that's where these close and unfortunate team fights can turn into just discord in the team, asking in the post game, did we need to do this?
Yeah.
It's the worst conversation to ever have.
What I hope is able to come from those conversations is, let's just use the first game, because that's the team fight that I'm remembering better. It's Spica on Lee Sin, like going in again to try and take down Danny, who ended up living in the fight with like 5% health. But then it baits everyone into this full ace. If Spica can just say like, oh yeah, oops, like my bad, shouldn't have done that. And then you just like freaking move on. It just, it gets really bad, because that's what allows you to have the trust long term. Like, I would be willing to accept, if I was like a teammate, if the shot caller is like, you need to let me make these mistakes. Like, and then like, I promise you, I will get better. But you know, it hurts, especially when they have 13 days to think about these next two. Cause the season ends when they stop ever going for any of these plays.
1,000%. Yeah. They need to keep going. They need to have that trust. I hope they do. And I hope that, I mean, like, especially since you know that a lot of these players, they're skilled, at times can be emotional, and I don't want them to think that just don't do it next time. It's always one
you
of
know what
you're
the
like,
most TSM hated. You know what the most TSM thing would be?
What?
Shenyi in
front of. Oh, don't say it. No, stop it. Don't want to hear it. No, get me out of there. That's the I came into this split. Legitimately, people will be like, okay, why do you have TSM so low? I had him in 9th, even though I was like talking praises about this team. Yeah. And I said, I do not trust that they wouldn't just be randomly swapping in when they're just like building
up. As soon as they lose a couple games, be like, guys.
We need to make a change. Week 2, thought we were developing these guys. Nope, we are bringing in TakeOver. Like,
who do they got? Maybe Instinct? Isn't he the Academy AD?
Is the Academy AD. Yeah. I don't want to hear it. If they do this, I'm ranting on Twitter.
Hey, your solo might be available. Pop that guy in the top lane.
No! He's doing well on Champs Q.
He actually is. He's going to make it onto a team. Like, that's happening. That's happening.
Yeah.
I hear Immortals needs a kick in the butt. Speaking of which, that has got to be, right now, the least enjoyable locker room in the LCS.
It has to be.
In theory, there's no locker rooms, but you get the analogy. Because okay, week one, they get perfect gamed by TL, lose the other two. I did check, they got like 13 kills and 5 kills in their two games. Mm-hmm. However, they then got nearly perfect gamed by Dignitas. Then this week, they get 1 kill. And then about 20 minutes into this game they had today against Hunter Thieves, they're also at 0 kills before they just start throwing their bodies at people and definitely losing fights to get kills so they don't get shut out again. Like, it's one thing to start 1-6. It's another thing to have, like, 2 shutouts, 1 single kill game, and another, like, 3 kill game. Like, they are just so... It is so hard for them to look like they even have a chance in these games. What are you, what is on fire for you?
What's on fire for me is the fact that they're trying too many things. And I know what the mentality is that throwing basically a lot of darts in the dartboard or anything at the wall and seeing if it sticks.
Yeah.
I think, and it's just like something I realized, is that if you're in a struggling situation, you have to just zero in on one way that you just believe as a team that you like, that you do well or that you can do well in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and you have to be positive about it. It's really, really hard to be positive about it. When you're like aiming and forcing one way of playing the game and you're still stacking up losses.
Yeah.
So, like, I remember me and Emily did the whole win condition thing, blueprints to success for I did IMT, she did Golden Guardians. And for me, I said I really wanted them to see them playing side laning, just like side lane compositions. When I say that, like, it may be a buzzword. Like, if you have windows to counterpick for top lane, please do that. Like, counterpicking for top lane is something that I think that Revenge has done really well in the past. In that unfortunate spring split where they were nearly, they had a lot of near hits, like they could have won. When they had Insanity on their team, they had a lot of, they were really good at that point. Good in the sense that the beginning of the split, they were on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, started teetering off when teams around them were just better. And, you know, can talk about individual skill, which led them to making changes bot lane and mid lane. But at the end of the day, they had a clear identity as a team. IMT is in, like, in those iterations, had clear identities around playing split push, playing flank, heavy flank with like Nocturne mid or something like that. Camille just like really pressuring you and having that ticking time. Now they have nothing.
Yeah.
And you can make the case that they have nothing because they're losing, but it's literally a pendulum of, okay, we came in with an idea, we lost, we'll try something new, we lost, so we'll try something new. But a lot of the, and of course we don't see like the bottom of the iceberg, which is 80% of it, which is the scrims.
Right.
But I think that's something that they really need to zero in on.
What I would imagine is happening would be, well, here's the other problem with them, is they never got a preseason. Power of Evil got in like a day before the season started.
Yeah.
And he is such a style-defining player with how he plays laning phase, which is, generally speaking, like strong vision control but low forward percentage. So he farms, but is very hard to gank. Like, it's actually very hard to shut down. So the teams that have succeeded the best with him are the teams that can minimize losses until he gets online and then have good trigger pullers. Like, in the past, Ignar and Santorin, when you're thinking about the FlyQuest teams, which is one of the reasons I think they signed Ignar, was like, in theory, they're saying, okay, we're going to do this. But they didn't even get the chance to practice that. And when they threw that out early on, it didn't work. So now they're bouncing around. And the more difficult thing would be, like, what actually was their goal coming into the split? Like, was their goal to not be the worst, or was their goal to, like, let's have an outside chance at winning, at making it to Worlds? Like, sure, that's unrealistic for an Immortals team, but, like, what is the point of finishing fifth or fourth or sixth? There is a big point of not finishing last, actually, I think, because you just get totally lambasted by the community and podcasters. But like, I don't know, man. It's difficult for me to figure out a path towards success for this team, because I think based on their roster, if they did just like pick Immortals champs and figured out this is Revenge's best picks. This is what Kenby wants to do. This is what POE wants to do. They'd have like pretty decent compositions. They might be like a little squishy at times because I don't think they're going to have a front line in jungle or top. But they'd probably win like 7 games.
Yeah.
If they did that with a real preseason and going, but like that doesn't inspire joy. That's just like super mediocre. So, that's a lot of talk for not many solutions.
Yeah. And I think that they can, once again, I wouldn't be too harsh on them for ending fifth when they're bringing on Kenby.
That would be considered like a huge success, actually.
Yeah. I think for them, they would be happy finishing fifth or something like that. With a new iteration of the team, of course, losing Giotto, and then making the change for a rookie jungler who is successful in academy, but is in the most competitive jungle split. I feel like the LCS has had personally, and so it's like, okay, you're in the new lay of the land. We can either play through you, or we can do something that you haven't been in a position for in your career, which is you're playing through your lanes, which I haven't seen Kenby do. Not saying that he can't do that. I'm saying that it's not the skill, or at least the value I put into him, seeing how he played in 100 Thieves Academy, right? They're playing that way. They're having him play to other lanes, it feels like. Even his counter pick, once again, it's just the meta. So when you see like Volibear Sejuani, I'm not against him going Trundle.
Yeah.
I'm not against that at all. But it definitely... You're not putting your volatile and versatile players, be it Kenby and Revenge, on picks to succeed. Like we saw on 100 Thieves picking Akali or Fudge picking Tryndamere, where I was like, great, you have a player who is creative.
Yeah.
Or at least is willing to be creative in those moments.
Kane and today for Inspired as well.
Exactly.
Zach for Pride Stalker. Okay, doesn't always work.
That one was... So, I think the first step is, of course, looking at your early laning. I don't know how, of course, their scrims go, but just, like, finding consistency in how your lanes play through your jungle, or your jungles play through your lanes, so you're not in a huge deficit by 10 minutes, which it feels like that's been the case for them.
Yeah.
And the next step is, like, how do we actually want to play our mid games out, which is building from the ground up, and is really hard to do.
Yep. Even, and we're to the 52-minute mark, so I'll try and keep this short, but I would agree, and I'm sure they know this, but just even the top teams, like, you can see this in, like, LCK doc series, like the little behind-the-scenes things, or, C9's reality series, like... Even really good teams will go back to basics as soon as they start losing. They're like, okay, how do we want to set up for First Dragon? Okay, what are our rules for how we set up Rift Herald? Because if you can just get those first couple steps more polished on their teams, you do end up just winning a lot of games naturally. When you have players that have been professionals for 7 years, like they actually do know how to end games when they have leads. So just getting that positive early game going is like the most important part. Anyway, I think that does it for LCS.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But I like how you said that.
But question, do you want to talk about NBA free agency?
I'm always down for free
agency. We haven't talked about this that much. So just before we go into that, thank you all the league fans for watching. Please subscribe. In terms of 10 thoughts, it's not going to be published this coming Thursday because it is an off week for LCS. It'll be published Thursday after that. But please subscribe because I am trying to effort some podcast content. We had a really interesting discussion on the pre-show today about talent development that I might like to have Emily and maybe like an LCS scout on for, which would be really cool to check out. But let's talk about NBA free agency for the few crossover fans that enjoy this. Yeah. We gave enough league content for the 54 minutes of LCS.
That's good.
How do you feel like the Raptors' chances are of getting Kevin Durant? That's one of the teams that are floated.
It's pretty high.
High?
Honestly, it's pretty high. Actually, at first I was like, it's not going to happen. It's actually just, I put it so down low in my priority list. I don't want to give myself any hopes. And also I just flatly believe that Kevin Durant would never want to come to
Toronto.
Which is the same thing for Kawhi, right?
Yeah.
They're both professionals, but why would they want to come to Toronto? The problem that I find that Kevin has is A, he is on a long-term deal.
4 more years, right?
Yeah, 4 more yeah. years with that team. So it's completely in the hands of the Nets of what they want to do. And the Nets just want a team. Like, if they're giving away Durant, they don't want to do it for free at all. So I think it's going to be really hard for Phoenix. Phoenix is not giving up Booker. And they actually just don't have enough on their bench, like a lot of talented players on their bench, to really get a trade going, which would feel justifiable because they're not giving their yeah. pieces away that stops them from being getting championship contention just for Durant.
Yeah, that's the trickiest thing for me is because like I don't think a team that isn't ready to make a run for a title.
Yeah.
Is going to want Durant, but then like the sheer amount of assets he would demand
yeah.
make it difficult to win when you get him. So like, I actually think he might not get traded. Like I know he's asked for it, but yeah. by no, like, and there's reports like, oh yeah, they're looking to do it. But
yeah.
he is also to me a guy that just loves basketball so much.
Yes.
Like he will probably just play if
which
they,
works against him.
It does. Yeah. Weirdly enough, like he's not, and like Ben Simmons will come back and then they'll get whatever, you know, I do think they're probably going to get rid of Kyrie though.
Yeah.
Funny though. I just want to share this. I found like ESPN radio on the AM in my car.
Oh,
and I just haven't turned the channel off. So, but it's nuts. How many times they can talk about Kyrie to the Lakers in different ways. Like that is literally every single time I turn it on, they're just like, but what do you think about Kyrie Irving? It's just
not. I'm not lying to you because I frequent the ESPN YouTube channel and yeah. anytime it's like update on, I'm looking right now. I probably have it up. It's like, okay. It's like update about the situation in yeah. the Durant situation, and it's another way of saying Kyrie is going to the Lakers.
They've said it so many times, I now believe it. Like,
yeah,
I read a report from Yahoo that, like, I talked to you about this. I don't believe this report because it basically said that, oh, yeah, they're gonna trade Westbrook for Kyrie, and the holdup is whether or not the Lakers are willing to take on Joe Harris. Instead, they want Seth Curry. And I'm like, there's no way. They don't hate Kyrie that much. Like,
yeah.
he is not... I just couldn't believe that. I'm like, the Lakers would make out like freaking bandits if that was the case. And
yes.
if they are, I feel like if Joe Harris and Kyrie were offered, because Westbrook's salary is like $47 million. And Kyrie is like 32 and Harris is 18. So those yeah. salaries actually match. Like Westbrook first rounder for Harris and Kyrie. The Lakers take that.
They would.
The instantly.
Nets, there are like literally two aspects where the Nets would never take that. The first one is like, yeah, the value of Russell versus Kyrie is not the same.
Yeah.
And also in terms of just building your backcourt, you're saying your backcourt is Ben Simmons and Westbrook?
It's Westbrook and then tall Westbrook. That's who they have in their backcourt.
It's literally not feasible. It doesn't make sense. And anyone who wrote that article, like, needs to look in the mirror.
The only, like, yeah, there's just, it's not an asset. Like, there was a time, like, sometimes they're saying, oh, yeah, having a big expiring contract is big. Unless I'm missing something, like, there's this super dope free agency class next year and they're really just gearing up for that. Otherwise it's crazy. I would say a really like outside contender that no one would be talking about would be the Jazz. Just because they have like 100 first round picks.
They have like, a ton now.
Yeah. And Mitchell Durant is like, oh yeah, maybe we can pretend it's Kyrie Durant and he'll be happy with that for a little while. And they'd actually have like enough assets, but
they might have to move him though. I feel like he's not gonna be happy with the current. Because they moved Gobert. It feels like the Jazz are in a rebuilding phase.
Yeah.
Unless if they literally go for Durant. Yeah, you know what? It's tough. It's hard to see.
They have enough picks, right? Like, who are the teams that literally just have too many picks?
Yeah.
That
would be them.
Because I think the Thunder That would be hilarious. Although no one is talking about the Thunder as a legitimate team for Durant to land, but they technically have like a lot of length. And like,
honestly, I was thinking that maybe Durant would want to go back just as a legacy push, because so many players are, I don't think he cares about people questioning his name or anything about that being a team hopper.
Yeah.
But certainly it's like, what org would he want to be with and want to stay with?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not the Nets who they built around for him, if it's not Golden State, which I mean, like, that's fair, whatever drama happened at the end, like, it could be OKC.
Yeah.
If he thinks that, there's like, hey, you know, this is where I started, then that would make sense. But he didn't ask for it. So, like,
yeah, the leak is that it wasn't in the list. That makes me think. I want to look up like Oklahoma City roster.
Ooh, that's fun. While you say that, the reason why I said Toronto is feasible is because, yeah, I mean, Masai Ujiri, for sure. He actually added length with the draft. Yeah, he's done it before. He's added length right already. So you can make the case that he would want to send Siakam, Gary Trent, even if, like, because basically Durant can fill that position. They have a pretty strong backline outside of that. Backcourt, I mean, outside of that. I feel like they can clean up the court. I don't think that they will trade away. What was the name? Oh my goodness. Rookie of the year. Actually, my brain, because of today, is
blown. Oh, Scotty Barnes.
Scotty Barnes. Yeah,
no
Scotty
way.
Barnes.
Scottie no Barnes. Way. I feel like There's they no keep way. That guy.
They keep
guy.
Him for sure.
Yeah.
But they will, I think Masai Ujiri is willing to trade as many people as he can to be
to get KD and try and do the Kawhi thing again.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. The other thing that I find really interesting about the whole, like, it's Kevin Durant, but it's also looped in with the Warriors winning another title. I think now the story matters just as much as the title.
Yeah.
And there's this other ridiculous report I saw on Reddit that is like, don't rule out the Warriors and their interest in Kevin Durant because they can match the salaries really easily and they have some great assets to send back to the Nets. If they packaged Wiggins with Kuminga, I'm like, the Warriors are distancing themselves so much from KD because even though they won two titles with KD, it's like, I think in the eyes of so many, those titles didn't count until they won again without him. Yeah. Now there's this weird way where I think you'd be like, yeah, Curry's won four. But when he'd won three, it was like, yeah, Curry won one, and then those two fake ones when they broke the salary cap.
Yeah.
So I see there's no world in which they would take him back because the story.
And there's another, podcast, you know, the Draymond Green podcast. The
Draymond Green Show. It's a very popular podcast.
It's a nice popular podcast.
Yeah.
Where, like, Steph doesn't say in much. He doesn't talk, but Draymond talks, and he talks about, like, the situation that got KD in, where, of course, you need Steph sign off for him to even be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the reaction to KD leaving without telling Steph or without telling the team. And of course, like, Steph taking it personally, like, these things are real. And I doubt that they would want him back, especially after winning a championship without him.
No way.
All
right. I'm looking at the Thunder. I don't see how they can get the salaries to make the trade work. I think the sell would be they'd pair SGA Shy with KD, but he's like the only dude on the team who makes over 10 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have like Derek Favors at 10, Josh Giddey's 19, Mike Muscala, 3.5. Like nobody on this team makes any money.
Yeah. Unless if Shai Gilgeous actually wants to be on a championship team.
Yeah.
And then pushes for a trade himself, then you can make that case because he's been hyped up for so long, for like 2 years or so. But I don't think OKC is in a position to ever be in a championship position. So, yeah, I feel like that's the only position. Like, if Shai's like, get me Shai, I don't remember how to say it.
Yeah, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, like if he says he wants out, then maybe that's possible, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah. Okay. There was like a lot of other free agency stuff, but literally people only talk about Kyrie and KD, so that's the most interesting stuff. And 100%. Good old Russell Westbrook,
Westbrook.
Maybe he's going to have a resurgence. Maybe he's just like Chris Paul.
I think that's what it is.
He's going to get somewhere else and it's going to be the right fit. You never know.
Hey, we were talking him up when he was on Washington.
Yeah.
Because Washington was in, you know, somewhat winning ways.
They made
ways
the playoffs. They made the playoffs. Exactly. Man.
So there it is. So he can, I don't know if that's what he wants, but he can definitely be put on a, in a garbage team and like build them up.
Okay. Because
he gives them direction.
I doubt we're going to have another chance to talk about this. So let's just make some predictions.
Ooh.
Kyrie to the Lakers percentage chance.
I think it's not going to happen this year. I think he's going to go into free agency and he's going to be on the Lakers.
Oh, shit.
I just don't. I think it's going to be. So the Nets, this happened. This is so crazy. Philly had their issues when it came to trading somebody that didn't want, like, that was willing to just sit out.
Yeah.
And I think the Nets are going to have the same situation where they will want to move him and find a bigger piece, but no one's going to trade for Kyrie on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
It doesn't make, I mean, I said this about Kawhi.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Then the Raptors won a title.
Yeah. But for at least, because at least Kawhi is going to put you in a winning basketball position. Kyrie is, sure. But I just, there's the injuries. There's other reasons that, there's always a reason. You know, COVID has passed. So, like, I'm in terms of like stopping you from playing. So he has less of an excuse. But,
dude, by the way,
I think it's really tough.
If he comes to LA, like, there's no guarantee that LA doesn't do another vaccine mandate.
That's true.
Like there's the two biggest, there's I guess the three biggest vaccine mandates were Toronto because of the Canadian border, and then LA and New York because they're such population centers. So like those are actually the three worst landing spots for Kyrie Irving.
That's true.
In terms of playing basketball.
That's true. And I think having, if I were to make a guess, just any finger on the pulse in terms of the politics, I don't think there will be a large enough vaccine mandate for, like, for the same situation that happened in New York. Toronto, Canada is a different situation, but I think that they'll peel off from that. But I don't think there will be a vaccine mandate that's heavy enough to stop, you know, Kyrie from playing.
Yeah.
Just because there's such a wear and tear with how long it's been happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for how many people there are that are fans of Kyrie's game that wants to see him play. So that would be my guess. I don't think there's anything that's going to stop it. So I would still be shocked if a deal could be made, with like in case of the Lakers. I mean, like even listening to Stephen A and stuff like that, where he's like talking about his sources are like, yeah, Kyrie's in the back saying how he's going to make it to the Lakers, blah, blah, blah. If that's literally a report about how Kyrie is only looking at the Lakers, why would the Lakers want to lose assets to pick him up?
I mean, unless, you could ask the same question about Anthony Davis, but they still gave away 7 first-round picks or whatever it was.
They did, yeah.
Like, they got him. They had to get him that year early, man.
It's yeah, like, they did.
Screw this delayed gratification thing. I want it now.
I want like, him now.
LeBron is old. Get him out.
Send them all out.
Okay, I'm going to say they get him. I've been brainwashed by ESPN.
Okay.
Kyrie's
going to the Lakers.
And then... I actually only give the KD trade like a 40%.
Yeah, I think I would give 30. Maybe Masai's just crazy, sends as many picks that like that's what the Nets want.
Yeah.
But the asking price is too big and the contract's too long.
Yeah. If I'm going to make up a trade, I wish I was on a trade maker. But like Siakam.
Yeah.
Van Fleet and Ananobi for...
Oh, yeah, Ananobi is disgruntled. That's true.
For KD and Kyrie. They can play together in Toronto. Boom. They'd still have long boy Scotty Barnes.
Yeah.
And Chris Boucher and Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah.
Then they win a title and they would do the rebuild again.
Yeah. I think they would need to send more assets, maybe draft picks. I don't know.
It's for Siakam and Ananobi and Van Fleet. You're not giving away. They'd have to give away their first round draft picks for the next 4 years.
3 years or something like that. Yeah. So, is Masai willing to do that? I think so.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
He won the title though. He wants to win the next one without selling out, I think.
Actually, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. That was fun.
That was good.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for joining me once again, Raz.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone else who listened to the NBA section as well. I'll put it in the title so that you know that it's there, but you don't have to listen to it if you're not an NBA fan. But
boom.
Yeah. That's how we do it. All right. See you next time, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.